Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Now, back to America This Week, live with Father Matt Malone and Carrie Weber.
Welcome back. You're listening to America This Week. I am Carrie Weber, and I am joined today by Father Matt Malone and Ashley McKinless, my fellow editors at America. And joining us now is Kate Hennessy, who is an author, a writer. She is the author of The World Will Be Saved by Beauty, an intimate portrait of my grandmother. And her grandmother was, in fact, Dorothy Day, the co-founder of The Catholic Worker. She's the youngest of Dorothy Day's 9 grandchildren. Kate Hennessy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
We're so glad to have you here. I wonder if we could start with a little bit about where this idea came from for you in terms of wanting to sort of mine both your personal life and your grandmother's history.
It came from the death of my mother in 2008. We had spent about 27 years talking about her mother after the death of my grandmother in 1980. And, my mother had a lot to process. Her mother was a powerful woman, and their relationship was very complex, very intimate, very close, and very difficult. And so we spent, until my mother's death in 2008, as I mentioned, speaking about her. And during this process, I kept saying to my mother, "Mom, you have to write this story. I mean, this is a fantastic tale. You have to write this." And she would say, "Oh, no, I can't do that." And, a few years later, I'd do the same thing, "Please write the story." And she would say no. So finally I said, "Okay, I'll write the story." And she looks at me and she says, "No, you're not going to write the story." Now, this was a shock to me because my mother never said no to me for anything.
You're the youngest, right? So you kind of get away with it.
She had a very very interesting parenting style, which was basically benign neglect, and it worked, actually. It worked. We all survived. She said no, and, that kind of put me off, but I listened to her, and I said, "Okay, I won't do that." And then I would get at her a few years later, and she wouldn't budge. And then she died in 2008, and quite suddenly. And I realized after that I had to write her story. If I didn't, it would not be written. And it was an incredibly important story. It was an incredibly important part of who Dorothy Day is. Her as a mother and as a grandmother, but mostly her as a mother, because that was the impetus. The birth of my mother was the catalyst that brought my grandmother to the Catholic Church.
And I wonder if, for our listeners who may not know, if you could just give us a brief biographical sketch of your grandmother.
Ah. Oh, yes, these brief biographies.
Not easily done, I'm sure.
Not easily done. I spent 7 years writing this book. There's a lot to this tale. I mean, we're talking at least 90 years of history. But the brief version of it is that my grandmother was born in 1897. She was born into a journalism family. Her father was a journalist, and her older brothers became journalists. And she, at the age of 18, became a journalist. And of course, this was not really accepted at that time, certainly not by her father. But she persevered.
For a woman to be a journalist.
For a woman to be a journalist, especially one who was 18 years old.
Sure.
And so she began this life in New York City. And she was very much involved with the radical movements of the time. Her first job was for a socialist paper, the New York Call. And then she moved on to the masses and other kind of radical groups. And then she kind of was introduced into the literary groups, the Greenwich Village literary types. Eugene O'Neill, for example, they became very, very good friends. And so this was kind of like her formation. She was arrested at the age of 20 for going down to D.C. and protesting for women's suffrage. and spent a horrific experience at the age of 20 in jail. It was quite instrumental in kind of leading her to understand just what happens in prisons. Then she suffered some terrible love affairs. She had an abortion. She really was kind of wandering. But in this time, she wrote an autobiography. Well, it's actually a novel, but an autobiographical novel. And from that, she was able to buy a cottage on Staten Island. And that was where things changed. She met my grandfather, fell in love, got pregnant again. She didn't realize she could get pregnant again. The abortion she had was horrific, right, and did a lot of damage. And so she was afraid that she would never have a child, and she became pregnant. And she was so so delighted, so over the moon, that it really opened something up. And she had my mother baptized. She was not yet in the Catholic Church when she had my mother baptized in the Catholic Church. I think this is one of my grandmother's wondrous geniuses, is that she would do things that no one else would think of. I mean, who would baptize their child into a religion which neither parent was part of?
Right.
So, but this, you know, then she, a year later, she was received into the church, and this kind of started a period where she didn't really know what she's doing. She still was a journalist. She still was very much interested in the social events and social problems of the day, but she didn't know how to combine these two things, her newfound religion and her radicalism. And she met a man, Peter Morin, 1933, who taught her the social teachings of the Catholic Church. She had no idea about this. And this just opened up the gates, you know, were flooded open. And she started the Catholic Worker, 1933, at the height of the Depression. And that started out as a newspaper and soon quickly developed into houses of hospitality, soup lines. In addition to the paper grew tremendously in 3 years. And so now we have, almost 85 years later, we still have the Catholic Worker movement with houses, about 250 houses around the country, around the world.
And the paper is still being published.
This paper is still being published.
Yeah. Yep.
And I think it still costs one penny a issue, right?
Yes, it does. 25 cents for 10 issues.
Right. So let's go back to your own journey then, into this story, and which is in many ways also your story, the story of your family, and how it is that you came to tell it now.
Well, as I said before, it really is. It's because of my mother. I mean, she was the catalyst for both my grandmother and for me, it seems now. As I'm sure people are aware, you know, in September of 2015, let me back up a little bit. My grandmother died in 1980. And in 1983, people started talking about her possible canonization. And then in 2000, Cardinal O'Connor formally opened it up. 2012, it was unanimously accepted or supported by the bishops. And then in September of 2015, Pope Francis, in his talk to the U.S. Congress, mentioned her four times as among the four great Americans. And so throughout this process, there's just been a slow but steady building up of interest in her. After she died, it kind of fell away a bit. I mean, people were very much interested in her when she was alive. A lot of people knew her. She was very famous. And then it kind of fell away. And now we're seeing, particularly in the last 10 years, there really is this this groundswell of people knowing who she was, knowing what she did, and supporting the canonization process.
How did you feel when you heard Pope Francis say her name? Did you have any idea this was coming?
I had no idea. I was staying at the Catholic Worker House down on East 3rd Street, Mary House, and I knew that they were setting up the TV in the dining room at Mary House, and they were going to listen to his talk, and I was late. You know, I was like 5 minutes late, and I rushed in, and I sat down. And as soon as I sat down, the very first words I heard out of Pope Francis's mouth was Dorothy Day. And I was like so shocked, I practically fell out of my chair. and people said, oh no, this is like the third time he's mentioned her. I mean, it was quite extraordinary.
Yeah. So you wrote this article for America in the May 29th issue, and you open it in a very striking way. You said, "My grandmother, Dorothy Day, believed that to lose one's faith was the greatest sadness. My mother, Tamar, Dorothy's only child, believed to her dying day that she had lost her faith." So your book, and or at least this article, is you trying to take those strands and reconcile them with each other and within your own faith. So can you, how did that process work for you?
Well, it's, I don't know if I can really explain how that process is working for me. But I think this has been something I've been dealing with since I understood who they both were. And I didn't really actually know that my mother felt until her dying day that she had lost her faith, because that's what she said on her deathbed. So, you know, that was something that was quite shocking for me to learn, you know, that she believed that. And so after her death, you know, this is quite something to try to come to grips with. You know, there's my grandmother with her fabulous faith, and there's my mother who believed that she had lost it. And so how do I make sense of these two, you know, these are the two most important people in my life, and to see how their lives were so different. And then as I was writing the book, what I discovered is that I understood both of them. You know, they both are in me. And it was an amazing process writing the book. And I don't really go into it in the book because I think it was too raw. You know, I was still grieving for my mother. When I started writing, she had only been dead for a year. So I really didn't go into that aspect. But since I finished the book, that really has been what I've been trying to sort out is, okay, I understand. I really do. I mean, I feel my grandmother's faith in the marrow of my bones. And I feel my mother's, you know, her separate way, which wasn't as easy to define, because she was a very quiet person. She was very different from my grandmother. She wasn't articulate. She didn't spell things out. My grandmother was a speaker and a writer. She liked to spell things out. My mother didn't. So I'm holding both these things of equal weight and equal understanding, and saying, okay, what does that mean for me? And I can't tell you anything more than that, because I'm still working on that process.
Today we are speaking with Kate Hennessy, who is the author of The World Will Be Saved by Beauty, An Intimate Portrait of My Grandmother. And her grandmother is, of course, the famed Dorothy Day, co-founder of The Catholic Worker. Kate, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about whether or not you felt pressure to be a certain kind of Catholic or a certain kind of person of faith, given your family's history. I mean, I have a mother who worked for the diocese and is saintly in her many ways, but that, I mean, like, that alone comes with some pressures, and she is not at least broadly up for canonization. So, you know, what does this do for your own personal faith experience?
It makes it more complicated.
Yeah, right.
Definitely. And there's several layers to this. One is, I think the most immediate one actually doesn't have to do with how I practice my faith. It has to do with how I live my life, in terms of, you know, one of the earliest questions that my mother was asked, and also that I was asked, was, are you going to follow your grandmother's footsteps? Now, that is a terrifying question to ask anyone, child
right.
or adult.
Right.
You know, my mother, she started hearing that when she was 8 years old.
Right, you know, and it's got to do something to you.
Yeah, well, you want to run away screaming. You know, I am not my grandmother. You know, my mother
right.
wasn't either. And for other people to place that kind of those kind of expectations on us, I think was quite unfair. But you kind of bring that in. You take it on. As much as I didn't want to, you know, there would be a certain amount of guilt and a certain amount of anger. You know, it's like, no, I'm not her. I'm not going to follow her footsteps. You know, and she didn't want me to follow her footsteps. I mean, she said, you each have to find your own way. She said, I don't mean for everyone to go out and do what I did. She knew how difficult it was. She knew how, you know, that we each have our own strengths and our own ways of, you know, our own gifts, our own vocations. She was a strong believer in finding your vocation. Hers was writing. You know, one of the things that she did immediately start to influence me was her writing. I mean, that was one of the very first things I noticed as a 7-year-old. You know, I would see her at her typewriter, and And my mother would say, shh, you know, Granny is writing. And I was like so amazed. It's like this was magical to me that anyone could do that. And so that aspect, you know, there were things. I do have a lot of similarities with my grandmother. It's actually sometimes it's a little disconcerting. You know, my love of travel, my restlessness. I mean, she had a profound restlessness. You know, so all of these, what she called, you know, a spiritual hunger. And I agree with that. I think that's absolutely true. So, I mean, there's this fine balance of trying to find out. And this was true for my mother, too. You know, trying to find out who you are when you're living in the presence of such a powerful personality and with other people's expectations. Now, I think, you know, I actually was not raised in the church. My mother left the church in 1967. Well, I put a date on it, but it's, you know, it was a long process. These things don't come quickly and or clearly. And so, but I'm the only one in my family that, you know, was not raised within the church. Everyone else went to Catholic school. You know, they did the whole catastrophe. And so it was kind of odd for me, you know, to be raised in such a powerful Catholic culture but radical Catholic culture. I mean, it was different. I mean, I was raised going to the masses underneath the trees, you know, with guitar playing and all that, and I didn't know there was any other kind of mass.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So I had a kind of peculiar understanding of that, and I've had to kind of come to grips with that. I mean, I'm still returning to the church. It's going to take me a long, long time, and you know that's fine. I'm in no hurry. So. And I think most people actually totally understand that. You know, that part seems to make sense to a lot of people.
Yeah, it does.
So,
I think it's a pilgrimage for most
yes.
people, right? And you know, in the Catholic imagination, our conversion is something that happens over a lifetime.
Exactly.
Right? You can't point to one moment. I feel like, I mean, good Lord, I'm a priest. I feel like I'm still returning to the church in many ways, right? And, yeah. You know, people always say, well, when did you decide to be a priest? When did you decide to be a Christian? I always say, this morning. You know, I hope. Yeah.
Yeah. And you have this one line in your piece for America that you said, for years I wanted nothing to do with a church that could leave my mother feeling she had no place in it. And for me, that struck me because I can't imagine being in the church without my mother and the influence that she had on me. So to have that as pushing in the other direction, I imagine would take a lifetime to overcome. Or
yes yeah. I mean, yes. I can't really yeah. expand upon that, but yeah.
Do you ever feel sort of resentful of having to share your grandmother with so many people, of having to kind of like people trying to maybe politicize her or make her a symbol of something that maybe you would agree or disagree with? You know, there's so many aspects to people having this sort of joint ownership of a sense of who she was and what she did. Do you ever kind of resent that?
You know, this is a lesson that I learned from my mother. She had to learn to share her mother immediately from the age of eight. She had to learn to share her, and this was hard for her, but she learned how to do it beautifully. She understood people's needs, and there are so many people with needs that really, really took a lot of energy from my grandmother. And the same thing with my mother. You know, I think one of the hardest things in this kind of life, a Catholic worker life, is kind of living with people's needs and understanding them and trying to find a balance between protecting yourself and helping. There's a lot of layers in terms of how people need or admire or despise. I mean, there's a whole range of reactions to my grandmother. And I've, you know, there's certain points where I've kind of wanted to say, but she's my granny. She's my granny.
Right. Sure.
But she's large enough. I mean, I don't need to grasp her. You know, sometimes I kind of like just remind people, you know, especially when they're talking about especially when they're talking about my grandfather, Foster Batrum. You know, I have to remind them, you're talking about my grandfather.
Right.
You know, please be respectful, because there's a lot of narratives out there that are actually quite disrespectful of him.
Yeah.
Also, I think what's even harder, you know, my grandmother got attacked often when she was alive, and she still continues to be attacked for her radicalism. I mean, she's a person full of paradox, and she doesn't have black and white answers, and that can really be difficult for a lot of people, and so they'll just kind of grab one aspect of her. And also, sometimes, people can be quite disrespectful of her. And, you know, that really gets my back up. It's like, you know, don't diss my granny, you know. So that kind of, but that doesn't really answer your question, really. I think, I have to get back to my mother's example, of welcoming her when she could come up to visit. And she would come visit us, often. We were living in Vermont. She was in New York. She was a huge presence in our lives. It wasn't like she was always away. I mean, we knew her very well. And so my mother was just so good at just accepting her when she came, just letting her be who she wanted to be, which she never had. My grandmother never had in any other place. There was always so many expectations. And so I think just watching my mother, I've just been able to learn to have that balance between, having her as my granny when I need her as my granny, and then just knowing that I have to share her with so many other people.
You know, as you say, so many people know the story and are familiar with it, and they draw satisfaction or consolation or inspiration from your grandmother's witness. What is something that we miss about her? Like, what is the thing that is most often overlooked in this story, in her story?
Oh, that's a really difficult question. I think she was such a prolific writer. It's really, I think one of the dangers is, and she had so many, speaking of conversion not being one point, mm-hmm. my grandmother really learned every step of the way what she was trying to do and what she needed to do. I mean, the Catholic Worker was an incredible school for her, because she was judgmental, she was, stubborn, bullheaded, had very strong will, and the Catholic Worker itself kind of really had to temper that. And so there you have this whole immense history of her growth, her conversion, all the way to the very end. And I think what people I find is one of the hardest things for me is that people will cherry pick from her life. And say, oh, she was this or she was that, just from one moment in her life. And I think what I would hope that people would do, and I hope that my book has helped, is to just give this whole expanse of this fabulous life with, huge mistakes and huge failures, but also incredible richness.
And I think that there is... I think I was telling you during the break that I was in Baltimore when the U.S. bishops voted to endorse the cause for canonization for your grandmother. And what really struck me was how her witness really united this very diverse group of people. I mean, they're all men, they're all priests, but they have different political views. They come at things from different perspectives, different regions of the country. And I remember thinking, wow, this really is a saint for our times, because the world is so polarized, and particularly here in the United States, and we get so boxed in. And yet, as you point out, if you look at your grandmother's life in its totality, it really is it's an affirmation of the role that faith can play in our lives, but it's also a challenge to us. And it's a challenge that transcends kind of our own divisions, whether they're political or social or what have you. And I thought that's precisely what we need, a kind of somebody who kind of calls us out of our intellectual corners or political corners and into life.
Exactly. One of the things that I so loved about her, well, there are many things I loved about her, but one thing that really struck me and that I use a lot in my own life is she was very clear about there are injustices in the world that need to be addressed, but she never went into direct conflict with the individual, very rarely, I should say. As I mentioned, she did have her judgmental moments, but she believed in always finding concordances with people, that face-to-face, you do not go for the conflict, you go for the places where you can meet. And so, I mean, there's just these wonderful stories throughout her life of how she was, you know, it looks like she's in conflict, but she actually wasn't. And one of these, I just want to quickly mention, there's this iconic photograph of her, her last address, her last, I'm sorry, her last, what's the word I want?
Her last
arrest.
Letter. Oh, her last arrest. Okay. Okay.
In which she's standing between two policemen, and it looks quite severe, but actually she's telling them a story, and they're listening quite intently.
Right.
So I just love to keep that image.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Kate Hennessy, who is the author of The World Will Be Saved by Beauty, An Intimate Portrait of My Grandmother. And what a lovely title.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And you can find her piece online. It's called Under the Gaze of Dorothy Day, Living with My Grandmother's Faith at americamagazine.org. We want to take a moment at the end of this broadcast to recognize with regret the passing of one of our most beloved contributors to America Magazine, Brian Doyle, who was a frequent contributor to America and to the Catholic Press. And he passed away really prematurely. From cancer at the age of 60 last week. You worked with him pretty closely, Carrie.
I did. We went back and forth a lot about his essays for America, and they were these sort of flowing, grace-filled, artistic essays. When I first time I read him, I went in a little skeptically, honestly. I was sort of like, oh, this guy, what does he think he's going to do with this sort of like flowing prose? And then by the end, I was like, oh, yes, like you've got me. You know, he could kind of reel you in on so many of his pieces in a way that really was beautiful. And he had a way of looking at the world, at the church, and seeing things that were easy to overlook. And he also had a way of ignoring punctuation that made the editors at America occasionally a little bit on edge. But we occasionally put those commas in, and he would write very poetically back to say maybe they should come out, and we would go back and forth. But, you know, and we published a piece paying our respects to Brian Doyle on the website, and I got a couple notes from people just saying, thanks for writing this piece. And at first I thought, like, oh, well, yeah, I must have written, you know, this is a testament to my writing. And I realized it's actually a beautiful testament to Brian's life that people would reach out to somebody they don't know to say, you know, I love him too, which is what more could you want in a life than to bring people together in a way that is grace-filled and beautiful and loving.
Amen to that.
Amen.
There was a, we would, over the several years I've been in this job, folks would say, well, we have a manuscript coming in. And I would say, oh, who is it from? And they would say, Brian Doyle. And we'd all be like, I guess that's going up. yeah, he had a really amazing ability to talk in a language that everyone could understand about faith in the modern world, and not in a pious or platitudinous way, but in a real way that really connected with people's hearts and with their minds. So may he rest in peace, and we thank God for his life. Ashley McKinless, thanks so much for being with us.
Of course, glad to be here.
And be sure to check out Ashley and her colleagues at the Jesuitical Podcast at
AmericanMagazine.org.
Exactly. And to find out more about all of the stories we talked about this week, you can check out all of our content at AmericanMagazine.org, where you can also follow us on Facebook and on Twitter. And to subscribe to America, call 1-800-627-9533. That's 1-800-627-9533 for a smart Catholic take on faith and culture. For Carrie Weber, I'm Father Matt Malone. Thank you and good day.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.